Good morning and welcome to Frankly Speaking. Today's show will discuss the art of storytelling in its most popular form, that of family oral histories. I'm Joan Ziemba for George Mason University. Good storytelling is an art, and it has been popular for years as entertainment, but recently it's received attention as a form of recording family histories. Alex Haley, author of Roots, was able to research much of his material for his book through conversations with a juro, a tribal elder charged with remembering and repeating the history of the tribe and tribal members, as well as through interviews with family members. With the holidays upon us, many families will gather together their far-flung branches and have a terrific opportunity to record some of their own family histories. Here to explain the art of oral history taking is Dr. Margaret R. Yocum, an assistant professor of English at George Mason University and a specialist in folklore and oral history. Can you tell us a little bit about what is oral history?
Sure. Oral history, in some ways, you could think about it as a research technique that people in all kinds of disciplines use, where you sit down one person to one or two people with a tape recorder and ask questions to answer things that you're concerned about. Oftentimes in oral history, then we're asking those questions about where did people come from? How long have they lived there? What have they done? But basically, anyone, whether it's history or English or geography, can use oral history techniques to get at information.
So it's almost an oral investigation.
Yeah, in many ways. What's most important is the idea of the use of the interview. And can begin to think of an interview as like a staged conversation, a conversation where, you're very well aware that you're having a conversation.
Where do oral histories begin? What's the origin of oral history?
What's nice about it is that it's some of the oldest things we've ever had. I mean, if you wanted to, in some ways, you could think about Homer or many of the Greek epics as oral poems in that sense. And in their own way, they've recorded historical events from the past. So sometimes we could say that that's some of the earliest forms of both oral literature and oral history.
Well, how then would that differ, say, from a lot of mountain folklore that we have today?
Just in time. Homer's stories came earlier. And what's interesting is actually there are many, many similarities, many ideas that we see in the epics of Homer that are also contained in American stories from the mountains. For example, the American Indians have a story about a young man who couldn't be killed, could not be touched, except he was vulnerable on one part of his body. And you can guess what that is, right? It's the ankle. So there are many similarities in oral materials from all over the world. It's one of the wonderful uniting kinds of things in our cultures.
So then is folklore a form of oral history?
Well, it's a good question, but not necessarily so. In folklore, we're looking for different kinds of forms. Folklorist thinks about stories, about beliefs, or sometimes more commonly called superstitions. Folklorist seeks not just for the train of information that comes forward in an oral history interview about one event after another, but those stories that are the full blossoming of an event.
But that also may or may not be exaggerated or embellished.
True. Stories come up as a person tells their oral history. If you were to sit down and tell me the story of your life, part of that life would be stories of either tragic things or funny things that have happened to you. A folklorist might look most closely at those stories. An oral historian might look at all of the events in your life equally as close for the knowledge of America's history.
If someone were, say, doing their family tree, investigating their family tree, would an oral history be helpful to their research in that?
Oh, yeah, because what you have in oral history is a chance to flesh out that tree, if you will. You know, when you collect a tree, you think about when someone died and when they were born, But with oral history, you can find out how they felt about their job, or how their grandchild believes they felt about the job if the person is long dead. But oral history offers the chance to make a more extended and in some ways more valuable document of a family's heritage.
Well, that makes me want to question. Some families may feel as though their family isn't interesting enough.
Yeah.
Is there any type of family or person that should or would want to conduct an interview like this?
Well, I'm prejudiced, I guess, thinking that I work in these materials so much. But I believe that every family has information that's valuable, certainly to them, probably to local history, and very possibly to national history as well. Most families, in fact, react to what you want to study us, why us, you know, why are we important? Oftentimes, as Americans, we don't think enough about everyday history, and we oftentimes don't realize the kinds of contributions that we can make.
As individuals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there are certainly people who may think of doing interviews more than others. Sometimes people whose families have come from other countries, especially in the second or third generation, as they think back over why people came, are curious, and they want to know, and they ask. Sometimes it seems to me that people who are interested in their families are sometimes people who've been away for their families for a little, and in that being away, they recognize what they had before, or they recognize the questions they have about their family, or they've learned about other families, and they realize, gee, I think maybe I'd like to learn about my own.
Yeah.
And then there are people who have stayed at home and just have always heard stories and who have always been curious and who also perhaps turn to their families for information as well.
If someone wants to do an interview, how do they explain to their family what they're doing?
It's a good question because, you know, a lot of times the family will say, what do you mean you want to work with us? Part of it is what I just mentioned before.
Well, plus some of these would be personal questions as well.
That's true. I think what an interviewer has to think about is whether she wants, is why she wants to collect information about her family. And she has to know this because they're going to ask her. So I think she really has to sit down and decide, well, is this something that I want because I don't want the knowledge that the people in my family have to pass away? I want to tell it for my children, for example. I want to know it for myself, for my own sense of who I am. All of those kinds of things may be
It seems like it could be almost more valuable than a photo album, because you capture the actual feeling of that person as well.
That's very true, although photos are a very valuable part of doing a collecting project with the family. And in fact, photos, if you show a photo to a person, oftentimes the photo will jog memories and make an oral history interview a good one. If you choose a few photographs and if you ask the person to comment in detail about each photograph as you hand it to them.
Besides a tape recorder and a few photographs, then, what else would be helpful to people if they're interested in doing family histories over the holidays?
Yeah. They might be interested in doing a little bit of reading about families that others have written. For example, William Owens has a book called A Fair and Happy Land, where he describes the history of his family from their beginnings in the United States, traveling down through Virginia, North Carolina, and on through Missouri and Texas. And in there is a lot of history, a lot of oral history, and a lot of traditional tales or folklore as well. So any book, too, that is a novel about family life sort of gets you thinking about the kinds of questions that you might want. And also, the government printing office publishes a little booklet that's called Family Folklore Interview and Question Guide.
Oh, that's fascinating. I didn't know they did that.
And I think it sells now for about 50 cents, and it comes out of some of the Smithsonian Institution's work on family folklore and with the Folklife Festival. It's been there every summer.
Oh, I guess that'd be terrifically helpful.
Can be. And there are also many books about family history that would be available at a public library, and about how to conduct family history interviews that our public libraries would most definitely have, and we do have here at Mason University.
Do you have some pointers on how they might conduct an interview?
Yeah, we can talk about that for a little while. Some of the things that I like to recommend to people who are interested is that, first of all, they think about why they want to do it, and then they think about the kinds of things they already know about their family. Events that have already happened in the family's life that they can give as examples of what they want to learn. Because a lot of times people hesitate in saying, sure, you know, I'll do an interview with you, because they don't know what you as the interviewer are looking for. Mm-hmm. They're not quite sure if they'll be able to answer your questions, and they may feel a little hesitant. So one of the best things you can do is to think of some questions that would make sense to your family, and also to think of some stories that the family always tells as examples. That's one way, you know, of preparation. You would want to make a list of questions that you might refer to from time to time, if only just to jog your memory of what you'd like to do.
I would think they'd have to be fairly well directed. You'd have to do some work pre-planning your interview to give it some direction.
Yeah, you'd want to think, perhaps make up a list of chronological family questions, thinking in terms of the family's life cycle. Mm-hmm. For example, maybe you could start off with the birth of an individual and their growth through childhood, their childhood jobs, their childhood friendships, their first days at school, their junior high school, all of these experiences, and think of the chronological list to build up some questions as well.
How long should be planned for an interview?
Well,
it seems like with that type of,
it depends. You see what happens. Yes, you can spend you can spend months, you can spend years when you think of all the individuals that are in your family. However, depends how much depth you want. Maybe you want depth about someone's life during the 1930s, and you can work more in that one area. If you want an overview, then you would be able to ask one or two questions about maybe each chronological area. But when you talk with a person, you ought to be very careful for signs of their tiredness. But oftentimes a person will be interested in talking anywhere from 1 to 3 hours with you. But sometimes, you know, like with my family, they would say, well, gee, aren't you supposed to be home for supper now? And let me know that the interview was over.
Well, I hope our listeners, if they're interested, pick up the Smithsonian book. That sounds like the government pamphlet. Sounds like a very good guide for them. I'm afraid we're out of time. I'd like to thank you,
sure.
Margaret Yocum, Dr.
Sure.
Margaret Yocum, for your advice and your guidance in this. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University, production coordinator Pat Ping. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Joan Ziemba for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.